Shakti Lobsang Rampa three lives. It is better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Foreword. This book is not presented to you as fiction for a very special reason. It is not fiction. Of course, we can readily agree that some of the words in the book about life on this world are artistic license, but accept my statement that everything about the life on the other side is definitely true. Some people are born with great musical talent, some people are born with great artistic talent, they can paint and captivate the world. Other people may be highly gifted through their own hard work and assiduous devotion to study. I have little in the material side of this world, no car, no television, no this and no that, and for 24 hours a day I am confined to bed because, for one thing, I am paraplegic, no use in the legs. This has given me great opportunity for increasing talents or abilities which were granted to me at birth. I can do everything I write about in any of my books except walk. I have the ability to do astral travel, and because of my studies and, I suppose, because of a peculiar quirk in my makeup, I am able to astral travel to other planes of existence. The characters in this book are people who have lived and died on this world, and because of special provisions I have been able to follow their flights into the unknown. Everything in this book about the afterlife is utterly true, therefore I will not label the book as fiction. Lobsang Rampa, Chapter 1, Who is that old geezer? Leonides Manuel Malagruba slowly straightened up and looked at the questioner. Eh? He said. I asked you, who is that old geezer? Malagruba looked down the road to where an electrically propelled wheelchair was just going into a building. Oh, him, said Malagruba, expertly expectorating upon the shoe of a passing man. He's a guy that lives around here, writes books or something, does a lot of stuff about ghosts and funny things. And then he does a lot of writing about people being alive when they're dead. He snorted with superior knowledge and said, that's all rot, you know, not a bit of sense in that rubbish. When you're dead, that's what I always say. You get them, the priests come along and they say you've got to do a prayer or two, and then perhaps if you say the right words you'll be saved and you'll go to heaven, and if you don't you'll go to hell. Then you get the Salvation Army come along. They make a hell of a racket of a Friday night, and then fellows the likes of me have got to come along with our little barrows and sweep up after them. They're the yelling and banging the tambourines or whatever you call the things, shoving them under the noses of passers-by, screeching out they want money for the work of God. He looked about him and blew his nose on the sidewalk. Then he turned to his questioner again and said, God? He never done nothing for me, never. I got my own bit of the sidewalk here which I've got to keep clean. I brushes and I brushes and I brushes, and then I takes two boards and I picks up the stuff and I puts it in me barrow, and every so often we get a car come along, we call em cars but they're really trucks, you know, and they comes and they takes me barrow and they upends it with all the stuff inside, and all the stuff is taken away and I've got to start all over again. It's a never-ending job. Day after day, no stopping. You never know what councilman is coming by in his big flash Cadillac, and if we ain't bent over our brooms all the time, well, I guess they go along to somebody in the council, and that somebody makes a racket with my boss, and my boss comes down and makes a racket on me. He tells me never mind if I don't do any work, the taxpayer will never know, but make a show of working, you get your back down to it. Malagruba looked about him a bit more and gave a tentative push at his broom, then he wiped his nose with a horrid sound on his right sleeve and said, you're asking the time, mister, if anybody says what are you saying to that the cleaner, but what I'm saying is this, no God ever came down here and done me brushing for me, me what's having my back breaking with bending over all the day long and pushing all the dirt that people drops around. You'd never believe what I get down in my patch. Pantyhose and other things, what goes in pantyhose is everything, you'd never believe what I finds on these street corners. But, as I was saying, no God ever came down here and pushed my brushes for me, never picked up any of the dirt on the roads for me. It's all me poor honest self what can't get a better job that's got to do it. The man making the inquiry looked sideways at Malagruba and said, bit of a pessimist, aren't you? Bet you're an atheist. Atheist? said Mille Gruber. No, I'm no atheist, me mother was Spanish, me father was Russian, and I was born in Toronto. I dunno what that makes me, but I still ain't no atheist, don't know where the place is anyhow. The questioner laughed and said, an atheist is a man who doesn't believe in a religion, doesn't believe in anything except the present. He's here now, and he dies, and he's gone where? No one knows, but the atheist believes that when he dies his body is just like the garbage you pick up there. That's an atheist. Mille Gruber chuckled and replied, that's him. That's me. I got a new thing what I am now, I'm an atheist, and when the guys what works with me asks me what I am, I can always tell them, no, I'm no Russian, I'm no Spaniard, I'm an atheist. And then they'll go away chuckling, they'll think old Mille Gruber got a bit of wit left in him after all. The questioner moved on. What's the point of wasting time talking to an old creep like this, he thought. Strange how all these street cleaners, street orderlies they call themselves now, are so ignorant, and yet they really are a fount of knowledge about people who live in the district. He stopped suddenly and struck himself on the forehead with his open hand. Fool that I am. He said, I was trying to find out about that fellow. So he turned and went back to where old Mille Gruber was still standing in contemplation, apparently trying to emulate the statue of Venus, except that he hadn't the right form, the right sex, or the right implements. A broom wasn't a very good thing to pose with, after all. The questioner went up to him and said, say, you work round here, you know about people who live around here, how about this? He showed him a $5 bill. I want to know about the fellow in the wheelchair, he said. Mille Gruber's hand shot out and grabbed the $5 bill and snatched it from the questioner's hand almost before he knew it was gone. Know about that old fellow? Asked Mille Gruber. Why, sure I know about him. He lives down there somewhere, he goes in that alleyway and then he goes down and then he turns right, that's where he lives, been living there about 2 years now. Don't see him about much. He's got an illness to his terminals or something, but they say he ain't going to live much longer. He writes books, he's called Rampa, and the things he writes about, they're just plain ridiculous life after death. He's no atheist. But they do say a lot of people reads his stuff, you can see a whole display of his books in that store down there, they sells a lot of them. Funny how some people makes money so easy, just by writing out a few words. And I've got to sweat me guts out pushing this broom, ain't it? The questioner said, can you find out just where he lives? He lives in that apartment building, you say, but tell me, find out for me, where does he live? You tell me the apartment number and I'll come back here tomorrow, and if you've got the apartment number and you've got what time he comes out about, then I'll give you $10. Mille Gruber ruminated a bit, took off his hat and scratched his head and then pulled at the lobes of his ears. His friends would say they had never seen him do that before, but Mille Gruber only did it when he was thinking and, as his friends would tell him, he never thought much, but he could put in a bit of effort at thinking if there was $10 to be made for so little work. Then he spat and said, mister, you got a deal. You shake hands on it and you come here tomorrow at this very same time and I'll tell you the number of where he lives and when he comes out if he don't come out earlier. But I got a friend what knows the caretaker there, they packs up the garbage together. The garbage comes out in those big blue things, you see. Well, my friend he'll find out for me, and if you like to spring a bit more I could find out some more things for you. The questioner raised his eyebrows a bit and shuffled his feet, and then said, well, does he send out garbage, letters, things like that? Oh no, said Mille Gruber. I know this, he's the only one in this street that got a thing what cuts up all his papers. He learned that trick away in Ireland. Some of those press people got hold of some papers of his, and he's a guy, so they say, who doesn't make the same mistake twice. He got a thing what turns out letters which looks like strips of confetti stuff which hasn't been cut off in pieces, comes out in ribbons, I've seen it myself in green garbage bags. Can't find any garbage for you because they're very careful up there, they don't leave nothing to chance and they never turn out a thing which can be traced. Okay then, said the questioner. I'll be around here tomorrow at the selfsame time and, as promised, I'll give you $10 if you can give me the apartment number and about what time he can be intercepted when he comes out. So long." And with that the questioner half lifted his hand in greeting and moved on his way. Maligruba stood still, so still that one would have thought he was indeed a statue, thinking it all over, trying to work out how many pints he would get for $10. And then slowly he shuffled along, pushing his old barrow and making a pretense of brushing up rubbish from the road as he went. Just then a man in black clerical dress swung around the corner and almost fell over old Maligruba's barrow. "Hey there, hey there," exclaimed Maligruba crossly. "Don't you go and upset all my garbage. I've spent all the morning loading it in that barrow of mine." The parson brushed off some specks from his jacket and looked down at old Maligruba. "Ah, my good man," he said. "You are the very man who can help me. I am the new incumbent to this district and I want to go on visitations. Can you tell me of new people in this area?" Old Maligruba put his finger and his thumb to his nostrils, bent over, and did a hearty blow, clearing his nostrils and just missing the feet of the parson, who looked shocked and disgusted. "Visitations, is it?" said the old garbage man. "I always thought that visitations were what the devil did. He visits us with visitations and then we comes out in pimples and boils and all that, or we've just paid our last cent for a pint and somebody knocks it out of our hands. That's what I thought visitations was." The parson looked him up and down with real distaste. My man," he said, "I would surmise that you have not been inside a church for a very long time, for you are singularly disrespectful to the brethren of the cloth." Old Maligruba looked him back straight in the eye and said, "No, mister, I ain't no God's boy. I just been told right what I am. I'm an atheist, that's what I am." And he smirked alarmingly as he said it. The parson shifted from foot to foot and looked about him, and then he said, "But, my good man, you must have a religion, you must believe in God. You come to church on Sunday and I will have a sermon specially for you, one of my unfortunate brothers who has to sweep garbage for a living." Maligruba leaned complacently on the end of his broom and said, "Ah now, parson, you'll never convince me that there is a God. Look at you there, you get a real packet of money, that I know, and all you do is to shoot out some words about a thing that doesn't exist. You prove to me, Mr. Parson, that there's a God, bring him here and let me shake hands with him. No God has ever done anything for me." He stopped and fidgeted about in his pockets until he found a half-smoked cigarette, then he flicked a match out of his pocket and struck it on his thumbnail before continuing, "My mother, she was one of those dames what does it, you know what I mean, for money. Never did know who my father was, probably a whole gang of fellows responsible really. But I've had to fight my way since I was a little lad knee-high to a grasshopper, and nobody's never done aught for me, so don't you, from your comfortable house and your comfortable job and your great big car, preach to me about God. Come and do my job on the street first and then see what your God does for you." Old Maligruba snorted with rage and jerked into action with unaccustomed speed. He swept his broom onto the top of his barrow, grabbed the handles of the barrow, and almost trotted down the road. The parson looked after him with an expression of utter surprise on his face, and then he shook his head and walked off muttering, good gracious me, what an ungodly man, what has the world come to?" Later in the day Maligruba got huddled up close with a couple of janitors, cleaners, managers, call them what you will, of some of the apartments around. They had a habit of meeting like that and exchanging juicy bits of knowledge. In his own way Maligruba was one of the most knowledgeable men on the block. He knew everybody's movements, he knew who was going into apartments and who was coming out. So then he said to one of the men, "Who's that old fellow in a wheelchair? Writer, ain't he?" The caretakers turned to look at him, and one laughed out loud and said, "Don't tell me you are getting interested in books, old fellow. I thought you were above all those things. Anyway, this guy is writing something about what they call thanatology. Don't quite know what it is myself, but I did hear some backtalk about it being how you live when you die. Seems ridiculous to me, but there it is." "Yes, He lives up in our place. Maligruber rolled his cigarette in his mouth and squinted down his nose and said, good apartment be got, eh? Bet it's all dolled up with the latest. Like to see inside one of those places myself. The caretaker smiled and said, nope, you're wrong there. They live very modestly up there. You don't have to believe all he writes, mind, but I do say as how he lives what he preaches. He's looking pretty bad enough to soon be going to see the truth of this Thanatos something that he writes about. Where does he live? What apartment, I mean? Said Maligruber. The caretaker looked about him and said, oh, it's a very secret, secret thing. People don't get to know his number, but I know where he lives. And what do you know about it, eh? Maligruber said nothing and they went about their ordinary desultory conversation for a time, and then he said, did you say 990-something, his apartment? The caretaker laughed and said, I know you're trying to trick me, you sly old dog, but as it's you I'll tell you what his number is. It's just at that moment one of the garbage trucks rattled into the lane and the automatic loader came into action, and the whining noise drowned out what the caretaker was saying. But being wise where money was concerned, Maligruber picked up an empty cigarette packet and fished out a pencil saying, here ya, write it on there. I won't tell who gave it to me. Obligingly, but rather wondering what the old cleaner was up to, the caretaker did so and passed it back to Maligruber, who glanced at it, touched his hand to his head, and slipped the packet in his pocket. I have to be going now, said the caretaker. Got to push out a few of these containers, it's our turn to get cleaned out next. See you. With that he turned and went back into the garbage room of his building. Old Maligruber walked on. Soon the garbage truck came around and two men got out, grabbed Maligruber's barrow and lifted it up to the back of the truck. Get in, old fellow, said one of the men, driver maybe, and we'll drive you back to the depot. Maligruber got in, not minding at all that he was about 15 minutes early, and back they drove to the garbage disposal station. Say, you fellows, said Maligruber, do you know the writer named Ranper in my beat? Yes, said one of the men. We collect a lot of stuff from his block, he sure does seem to spend a lot on medication. We get an awful lot of empty cartons, bottles, and the like, and I see now he's been having a lot of injections or something. He's got needles what's marked tuberculin. Don't know what it is but that's what they're marked. Had to stop a caretaker, a relief one, from getting in touch with the police because how come anyone would want these things? Is the old fellow taking drugs? They wondered. The garbage collector stopped while he carefully rolled a cigarette, then when he was quite satisfied he resumed, never did believe in people getting in touch with the police on wild cases. I mind a little way back. Last year it was, there was a real humdinger of a fuss. A relief caretaker had found an old oxygen cylinder among the garbage and in spite of the cylinder being quite empty without even a valve on it, she got in touch with the police, she got in touch with the hospitals until eventually after a lot of trouble it was found there was a perfectly legal explanation. After all, people don't have oxygen cylinders unless they're ill, do they? They glanced up and jumped into activity. It was a minute past the hour they were working overtime and not getting paid for it. Quickly they tore off their overalls, put on their everyday jackets, and rushed off to their cars to spend an idle time lounging around the street corners. Next morning Maligruber was a little late getting to work. As he moved into the depot to get his barrow, a man gave him a hearty greeting from the cab of an incoming truck. Hey, Molly, he shouted. Here's something for you, you've been asking so much about the guy, here's something what he writes. Get your head into it. And with that he tossed a paperback book at Maligruber. The title was I Believe, muttered Maligruber. Don't give me none of that rot. When you're dead you're dead. Nobody's ever going to come along to me and say hi Maligruber, you done pretty well in your life, old man. Here's a special throne made for you out of old garbage cans. But he turned the book over in his hands, fumbled through a few pages, and then shoved it into an inside pocket. What you doing there, Maligruber? What you stealing now? A coarse voice asked, and out of a little office a squat, thick-set man emerged, extended his hand, and said, "Give." Maligruber silently unbuttoned the top button of his jacket and fished out the paperback book, then passed it over. "Hum," said the superintendent, or foreman, or whatever he was. "So you're going in for this type of thing now, eh? Thought you didn't believe in anything except your pints and your pay packet?" Maligruber smiled up at the squat man who, although short, was still taller than Maligruber, and said, boss, you get a load of that book yourself and see if you can tell me how they make out, if there's any life after this. If I go along and I see a fish head in the corner of one of the lanes, I picks up that fish head and nobody's ever going to tell me the fish is going to live again." He turned and spat expressively on the floor. The superintendent turned the book over and over in his hands and then said slowly, "Well, you know, Maligruber, there's a lot of things about life and death, we don't understand it at all. My missus, she's real sold on this fella, she's read all his books and she swears that what he writes about is the truth and nothing but. My wife's a bit of a seer, you know, she's had a few experiences and when she talks about him it sure scares the hell out of me. In fact, only a couple of nights ago she frightened me so much about the ghosts she claims to have met that I went out and had a drink or two and then a drink or two too many, and by the time I got home that night, well, I was afraid of my own shadow. But get on with your work, lad, get down on your beat, you're late. I won't book you this time because I've been delaying you myself, but get a move on. Make one foot get in front of the other a bit faster than usual. Git." So old Maligruber grabbed his barrow, made sure it was empty, made sure the brush was his, and off he ambled down the road, starting another day as a street garbage collector. It was boring work all right. A whole bunch of school kids had come by and left their filthy litter in the gutters. Old Maligruber muttered cross imprecations as he bent down to pick up toffee papers, chocolate papers, and all the litter which a bunch of kids make. But his little barrow was soon full. He stopped a while, leaned on the end of his broom, and watched some building construction. Then tiring of that he moved on to something else. A broken down car was being towed away. Then a clock struck and Maligruber straightened up a bit, shifted the cigarette to the other side of his mouth, and moved off down to the shelter in the little park lunchtime. He liked to go in there and have his lunch away from the people who sat on the grass outside just making more litter for him. He walked down the road pushing his barrow before him, and then reaching the little shelter he fished a key out of his pocket and unlocked the side door, and in he went. With a sigh of relief he pushed his barrow out of the way and sat down on a load of flower crates, crates in which flowers for the garden had been packed. He was just rummaging about in his lunch pail for his sandwiches when a shadow fell across the doorway. He looked up and saw the man he had been hoping to see. The thought of the money greatly attracted him. The man walked into the shelter and sat down. He said, "Well, I have come for the information you were getting for me." As he spoke he got out his wallet and fiddled with the notes. Old Maligruber looked at him early and said, "Well, who be you, mister? We street orderlies don't just give information to anybody who comes along, you know, we got to know who we're dealing with." With that he took a hearty bite at one of the sandwiches and squashed tomato, pips and all, came spurting out. The man sitting on the boxes opposite hastily jumped out of the way. What could the man tell him about himself? Could he say that anyone would have known that he was an Englishman and a product of Eton even though he had been to Eton for only rather less than a week through an unfortunate mistake when, during the darkness of one night, he had mistaken the wife of one of the housemasters for one of the roommates with quite disastrous consequences. So he had been expelled almost before he had arrived, thus establishing some sort of a record. But he liked to claim that he had been to Eton, and that was perfectly true. "Who am I?" he said. "I should have thought the whole world would know who I am. I am the representative of a most prestigious English publication, and I wanted the in-depth life story of this author. My name is Jarvey Bumblecross." Old Maligruber just sat there munching away, spraying sandwich all over the place and mumbling to himself as he did so. He had a cigarette in one hand and a sandwich in the other. First he would take a bite of the sandwich, then he would take a draw at the cigarette and so on. Then he said, "Jarvie, eh? That's a new name to me. How come?" The man thought for a moment and then decided that there was no harm in telling this fellow. After all, he would probably never see him again. So he said, "I belong to an old English family which goes back for many generations, and many years ago my maternal great-grandmother eloped with a cabman in London. In those days cabmen were called Jarvies, and so to commemorate what was a rather unfortunate affair, male members of the family have had the name of Jarvie ever since." Old Mulligruber thought it over for a time and then said, "So you want to write about this fellow's life, do you? Well, by what I've been hearing, he's had too much written about his life. Seems to me from what the other fellows and I have heard that you pressmen are making life a misery for him and his likes. He's never done any harm to me, and look at this now." He extended one of his sandwiches. "Look at it, dirty newsprint all over the bread. How am I supposed to eat that? What's the good of buying these papers if you don't use an ink which stays put? Never did like the taste of a newsprint." The man was getting crosser and crosser by the minute. He said, "Do you want to impede the work of the mass media? Do you not know that they have a perfect right to go anywhere, to enter anywhere, and to question anyone? I was being very generous in offering you money for information. It is your duty to give it freely to a member of the press." Old Mulligruber had a sudden flush of rage. He couldn't stick this smooth-talking Englishman who thought he was one higher than God himself, so he rose to his feet saying, "Get you gone, mister, get yourself off, beat it, scram mosey, or I'll pack you up in my barrow and take you back to the depot for the other fellows to give a working over." He grabbed up a leaf rake and advanced on the man, who got up quickly, moved backwards and tripped over all the grates. He went down in what seemed to be a welter of arms and legs and flying wood, but he did not stay down. One look at old Mulligruber's face and he was up in a flash, and he did not stop running for quite a time. Old Mulligruber moved slowly around picking up crates and odd pieces of wood, mumbling irritably to himself, "Jarvie cab driver, whatever sort of yarn do they expect me to believe? And if he had a great-grandmother, or whoever it was, married a cab driver, then how come this fellow is such a stupid dope? Ah, for sure," he went on, his face getting darker and darker with anger, "it must be because he's an Englishman that he's got this manner." He sat down again and had a go at the second lot of sandwiches, but no, he was too angry to continue, so he bundled the rest of his food back into his lunch pail and went out to the park to get a drink from the tap there. He moved about looking at the people. After all, this was his lunch time. And then around the corner of a path where they had been hidden by a tree, two parsons approached. "Ah, my good man," said one, "can you tell me where there are, public facilities for men?" Old Mulligruber, in a bad mood, said, "Nay, there ain't none of them things here. You'll have to get off to one of them hotels and say you've got to do it in a hurry. You come from England where they have them in the streets." "Well, we don't have them here. You'll have to go to a gas station or a hotel or the like." "How extraordinary, how extraordinary," said one of the parsons to the other. "Some of these Canadians seem to be intensely averse to we of England." They went on in some haste to get up to the hotel just a block further on. Just then there were screams coming from the direction of the little lake in the center of the garden. Mulligruber turned in a hurry to see what was the excitement. He walked down the path toward the pond and saw a small child of about 3 floating in the water. Her head kept going under the water and bobbing up again. Around the side of the little pond a group of onlookers stood idly, no one making the slightest attempt to go to the rescue and pull the child out. Old Mulligruber could move fast sometimes. He did now. He charged forward and knocked some old woman flat on her back, and another one went reeling sideways. Mulligruber jumped over the little stone wall and floundered through the shallow water. As he did so, his foot slipped on some slime at the bottom of the pond and he went down head first, cutting his scalp rather badly, but he got up, scooped up the child in his hands and held her upside down as if to pour the water out of her. Having done that, He stepped gingerly along the slippery bottom and then climbed over the wall again onto dry land. A woman came rushing towards him yelling, "Where's her hat?"